We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Vernomatic Productions.
Are you ready?
Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more.
Want to be part of the show?
Send us a message through our website,
MetalMayhemROC.com.
Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
A proud member of the Pantheon podcast team.
It's getting nice and heavy.
Now, welcome our hosts, John the Vernomatic Verno, and direct from New Jersey, Metal Walt.
Good evening, everybody. As always, new content drops every Thursday night. Tonight's episode, we're joined by filmmaker Damian Collaudi. Damian has a brand new four-part docuseries on YouTube out called Immortal Soul, a riot tribute and concert film. It surrounds the history of the legendary New York City band Riot. Damian didn't get into Riot until about 3 years ago, so it was really cool how this band from 40 years ago is affecting this guy, you know, 40 years later. Now, the film centers around the Keep It True Festival from 2022 in Germany, and Damian was there interviewing people from the crowd, fans of Riot. It truly is like a cool vibe. Again, this four-part documentary series explores the history and archives of the different eras of Riot. Immortal Soul also features interviews with past members of Riot. In our dialogue with Damian, we find out what inspired him to make this film series. With vintage concert footage, 8mm personal film, and concert advertisements, this is filled with just like nostalgia and never seen before concert videos. It truly is cool. Additionally, post-conversation with Damian, we caught up with our friend Rick Ventura, the Riot guitarist from 79 through 83 and founder of current active band Riot Act. So Rick's here to talk about episodes 1 and 2, give his commentary, and reflect back on some of the old days with Riot. He was amazed at some of this video footage. It's cool. This is really a cool conversation. So that's coming up in just a second. But first, we just want to remind you to get up to our website, MetalMayhemROC.com. Join our community by signing up for the newsletter. There you'll get updates on everything we do here. We have podcasts. We have YouTube interviews. We have a live radio show on Monday nights on Metal Devastation Radio. So there's a lot going on up here at MMROC. So get involved. All right, well, let's get into this. Damian Collaudi, filmmaker, Immortal Soul, a Riot tribute and concert film, and then Rick Ventura of Riot and Riot Act. For my co-host, Metal Walt, I'm the Vernomatic. We are Metal Mayhem ROC. Today, we have a fun one. We have independent filmmaker, rock enthusiast, Damian Collaudi here today to talk about the brand new four-part series he put together, Immortal Soul, a Riot tribute and concert film series. Damian, welcome to Metal Mayhem ROC. How are you, man?
Great, man. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to introduce you to my co-host, Metal Walt.
What's up, Damian?
He's a Jersey guy. I'm Rochester, New York, so we have a nice little recipe of metal here. Before we get into this, and we're really excited because longtime fans of all this, why Riot? Why now? And how did this all come about?
Well, Riot was a new discovery for me. I had found out about them a little over 2 years ago, I guess, now. And I was just like, holy fuck. Like, why have I never heard of this band? You know, I'm from Jersey, lived in New York, like into the rock scene, into the metal scene. you know, listening to WSOU as a teenager and all that. And I'm like, what? Who is this band and why do I not know them? And they sound great. And then like, they have all these different like albums and different styles and different versions of the band. And I was just like, this is so weird. And I just started like getting obsessed with them and like the music and the story and like, what is going on here? Like, why is this band not like hugely known? And it just sort of became a bit of an obsession. And I started buying all their records, you know, just the vinyl. And I'm like, I'm going to buy all these guys' vinyls. And they had all these nice archive sets, you know, that had been out already at that time. And I'm like, well, someone appreciates this music and has, you know, put these sets together. And I'm just going to explore, you know. I just was like really excited about discovering all of that, the whole discography, pretty much, you know, like the same moment in time or over a short period of time.
Damien, I got to ask you, to further that point, I'm 53. I don't know how old you are, but, you know, it's interesting because on YouTube, I see that you put a video out there. It's almost an hour of your whole Riot collection. So I guess, you know, to further on, I mean, number one, my first question is, you're Jersey, you're from New York, and you're currently living in Germany. Like, how did you end up over there and why are you there?
That's my family situation brought me here. I had my son was born in Munich in Germany, and I came over here to do the family thing. It was just a better place to be, you know, to have a kid and all that. And I'd been in New York living that sort of East Village, you know, rock and roll lifestyle for quite some time. I'm 46 now, so I'm like, you know, I could use a change from the city. The city lifestyle is getting a little tough, and it's not really the great place for the kids. So, like, I'll go over there and change it up and see what that's like.
Okay. But in the meantime, you're discovering Riot, right? So, I mean, maybe to add on to your point, when did you discover Riot? And as you started doing this, like, obsession, gotta have everything about Riot, how far along did it take before you got to the point where you said, okay, now I'm going to make an independent film about this? And then from that point, how long did it actually take for you to gather everything you needed for this project to put it together and shoot it?
Well, that's not a short answer, but it was end of 2021. I started sort of like, I had read that article in, I guess, Louder magazine, like, you know, the unluckiest band in the world. And they had some videos and it was really like a well-written, interesting article. And that sort of like hooked me. That's when I started exploring. And then it had been quite some time. And while during that exploration, I saw there was a film about Riot out, the Fight or Fall film that the Metal Voice put out. Which, you know, has a lot of information. And so I'm like, you know, I had Steve Blush, who's in the film, wrote a book, New York Rock. He's in my previous film about Bitch, A Lady's Tribute to Metal, which was a rock and roll party at Don Hill's with just women singing metal covers. And I made a film about that. And he was the DJ and promoter of that. And he's in the last film. And he was like, you should make a film about Riot. And I was like, there's already a film out there, you know, like probably what doesn't make sense to do anything since that film's out there. And so I put it aside for some time, but like, as I kept like researching and enjoying the band, I kept finding like these little different interviews or, you know, historical video artifacts online and sort of downloading them and collecting them. And at some point I'm like, I saw Riot 5 was playing at the Keep It True Festival, which is like a couple hours from Munich. And I'm like, I've never heard of this festival, but like, I'm going to go see them, you know, like, and I contacted Mike Flint and said, you know, I'd like to make a little documentary, like a mini documentary. I'll just do like the European angle, you know, I'll approach it differently. I'll just talk to the European fans to make it different from the other film. It'll be like a mini doc, you know, and then we'll see. We'll just do something small, you know, it'll be just like a little tester. So I went there and I wasn't even sure if I was going to film, but, you know, I ended up shooting with my iPhone most of those interviews. And once I got going, it's just like people started introducing me to other Riot fans, and I just started getting good interviews and cool footage. And you know, it grew from that moment. It grew. Then later I did interviews with Mike Flint and Donnie, and then Mike Flint introduced me to Giles Lavery, who had put together the Riot archives. And some months later, he sort of gave me the Mark Reale archive on a hard drive, which had a lot of that old footage that was in the film. It was, I had to like really work with that footage because it was like out of sync and all chopped up in this one QuickTime file. And I had to basically like reassemble it. So I didn't set out like, oh, I'm going to make like this big epic 4-part, you know, movie and spend the next year doing that. It was just grew into this like huge project from what I thought was going to be a mini documentary.
Well, Damian, we want to get into a lot of the details about that because we have a ton of comments and questions for you on that. But I think one of the most important points is in the first episode is you bring up the point, you say it's a great story and your goal was to make sure that Riot wasn't forgotten. So I think that's a testament to how we all feel about the band. But just talk about that comment itself and what it meant to you to keep that legacy going.
Well, because that was one of the motivations. I was just like, this band deserves to be more known. They certainly deserve, like, their music deserves to be out there. Like, just, yeah, I started asking my friends back in New York, like, hey, do you guys know Riot? Like, a couple people, a handful of people were like, oh, yeah, I heard about them. But more often than not, I heard, oh, you mean Quiet Riot? I'm like, no, just fucking Riot, you know? And I realized, like, man, like, no one knows about this band, like, you know, from my contemporaries, like, this is just bizarre. And I'm like, I can do something. And it just became like, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it became like I couldn't get out of my brain. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do this little mini documentary and get it out of my system, you know, like, because I just keep thinking about it, keep finding things. And it became like a mission. And I'm like, you know, I can do this. I have a background and skills where I think, put something together and present it in a way that maybe it hasn't been presented before, you know, like people have been doing a lot of stuff, but like presenting it in a larger format and that's very accessible and coherent. Like, you know, I have a documentary background doing that. So it, and with rock and roll material too. So it, you know, it fit into like what I had been doing with the NYC Rocks over the years. And it just became like this mission. The more I learned about it, the more I'm like, yeah, Mark Reale really deserved better. He deserved more. And I don't know, you feel sort of like, I never met him, obviously, but you feel a little bit of like a kinship in with his spirit, just like as you're learning about him and his personality and some of the things he went through and things like that. So, you know, like I started to really like relate to them in some ways as an artist also trying to, you know, get myself out there, my work out there, and probably not getting this, you know, the success that you want or the attention that you want, or you know, so there was all that together, I guess, intertwined. There was something magical in like guys' voice and that sound that they had together. Just something like a, I don't know what the word is, like classical and timeless, you know, in their sound. And you know, I started getting more into like the last few years, sort of like the new wave of British heavy metal sound, more the this traditional heavy metal sound. I mean, I got into metal in like the early 90s, you know, like 90, 91, like when Guns N' Roses and Van Halen and same time as Nirvana was also coming out, you know, but I was into Megadeth, Metallica, Anthrax, but not, you know, when they were at their peak. It was like, you know, already the early 90s and grunge was coming on. So I did miss, you know, that golden age of metal and rock, like in the mid to late 80s. But I always liked the kind of metal that's fast and melodic, you know, like the vocal style for me. I like when they can sing most of the time, but I like really fast. So then Riot had that, especially with like the Thundersteel stuff too. Like that for me is like that formula of fast, aggressive, high energy music, metal, hard rock. I mean, I like the whole spec. I like punk rock, you know, like all of it. that combination just sort of resonated. It just sonically resonated for me. And all their, you know, in those particular forms, the speed metal stuff and then like the early guy stuff, like it just, I don't know. Sometimes you just hear something and you're just like.
Yeah, it comes back to vocals. And you're right on the guy vocals. The band, you know, I've been into Riot for years, but you're right. I subscribe to the, has to have a hook. You have to be able to listen to the vocalist. Now, don't get me wrong. I could easily pivot to harder stuff like Slayer and Exodus and that thrash stuff, but I grew up on that. I was a 14-year-old kid getting into that, so it's in my DNA. But for someone that's older getting into that, you don't have that connection to it.
For me, John, it's like I'm 53, so I'm a little bit older than Damien. However, it took me a while because I missed the boat by about 5 years from that sweet spot of metal, right? So I had to catch up just like he did. And unfortunately, I never got to see the classic lineup. I saw the Riot 5 lineup. Actually, it was like about a couple of days right around the time Mark passed in 2012. They played BB King's in New York City.
Oh, you were at that show. Yeah.
I was at that show.
I've been editing footage from that show for a later chapter, actually.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I have a great audio track of that. If you need some assistance on that, I can send that to you as well. But that's the point too. But Damien, there was a part in one of your segments where you got out with the fans. And to this point here is you asked the fans to describe what they like about the band. And it's not an easy question to answer, but I thought of it for myself and I wrote it out and I want to read to you what I think Riot means to me. So to me, Riot is a good, clean, hard rock metal band with melodic vocals, memorable songs, and great shredding. It's new wave of British heavy metal or power metal sound perfected. That's what Riot is to me.
We can splice that in right there, right into that part in the film. I'd say that's pretty accurate. Same, you know, similar reason why I appreciate them also.
You know, I want to go back to the film itself because it's well done and put together. But you know what I love, or John and I love, that the opening is you're on the train going to Keep It True. And, you know, you're sitting in the European train and you're on your way. But what makes this documentary or this film really, really nice is, yes, it's based around the Keep It True Festival. But you're talking to Oliver, the show promoter. You're talking to all of these colorful fans, and there's a lot of them, a lot of them, from the curly blonde haired guy that's almost spilling his beer to the couple, you know, to lots of great quotes. But it's the interplay between the show, you guys going back to the archive footage and the beginnings of the band. And then as Riot 5 are playing these classic songs, you're showing the performance, yet you're also taking us through a back history and talking to the fans of the promoter about like their opinions of Riot. So just talk a little bit about like what you set out in how this whole structure of the film was going to be laid out.
Well, I didn't know that I would have all this archival footage, you know, when I was doing that. But I knew the questions and the topics that I wanted to cover. So I was able to sort of like steer the interviews thematically, you know, based around, you know, the questions I gave and the conversations I had, where I know there were certain topics I wanted to talk about, like, well, how did you feel about, you know, like the different eras or what makes the music special? And so, you know, I've done that with other films. I've done two documentaries about revolutions in Ukraine outside of all the rock stuff. And it was also like doing a lot of these, you know, people on the street interviews and trying to tell a story with these with interviews, just talking to people and piecing that together later. I've had some experience doing that. And I think I was able to sort of like get, you know, it's not easy approaching like strangers and just asking them to talk on camera. So it takes a little warming up and trying to get people comfortable and, you know, loose and relaxed. And not everyone was, but a lot were. So there's, you know, there's definitely this like interpersonal dynamic at play when doing that. And I wanted to get like people from different countries, people from different, you know, age brackets also. I mean, this was interesting for me because most of the time online, you see like the people who comment on these riot groups that they're older people. They're people who grew up with them. And here there's like a whole new generation of people that are appreciating the music and into it. And so that was also, you know, like, ah, this is something, you know, I want to explore. So it started out just being that, and all the other interviews, that was the first thing I did. All the other interviews came later, you know, with Oliver, with Mike, and, you know, I didn't know if it would come together or not. It's sort of like you're build a little sculpture, and then you're like, oh, let me try putting this here and that here, and it just builds out.
What was the plan? Two-part question here. Did you set out to make a four-parter? And what was the plan if you didn't receive all this additional media? You talked about the Super 8 home movies, the exclusive footage. How would you make up four parts of this?
Well, I wasn't going to make four parts. But like I said, I just thought I'd make a mini documentary. I'm just going to go and make like a 20-minute thing about Riot, you know, like just talk to some people, edit it together, put something, a little thing together. And then maybe I can, I don't know, build some interest from the band or somewhere to get some funding to do something bigger or not. But like, you know, let me just put together like a shorter thing and then see how that goes. And maybe, you know, down the line, because, you know, like doing something like taking on a project like that for no budget, no money, it sort of doesn't really make sense at this age.
Of course. Well, some of that footage is fantastic. Like the home movies of the guys walking around New York, and it's perfectly intertwined with the content and the copy of the piece. Let me ask you, did you get this from the Really Estate? Where did you get all this stuff?
So this came from Giles Lavery, who put together the Riot Archive Collections, and he also produced that movie that the Metal Voice did called Fight or Fall. I don't know if you guys have seen that. And they use a lot of that footage, but they used it in a different way. They used it more as B-roll. So like they'll have interviews, then they'll drop it over the interview without audio. And when I saw the footage, I'm like, you know, it's really cool to just like hear the natural sound from that. The audio is actually out of sync. So I had to sync the audio, and then it was scattered all in one QuickTime file. So I had to like find those little bits that I thought could go together and sort of construct like that New York City montage of them walking around and doing this, you know, and put that all together. But that footage and everything that came Giles got, because he went into Mark's bedroom and pulled out like boxes of stuff.
Wow. You
know? So
that's so awesome.
All this stuff initially, you know, came from Mark's bedroom. Mark's dad had let Mike Flint and Giles come in and be like, yeah, I mean, you know, after Mark had passed, like the stuff was just there in his bedroom. So it was better that someone came. And it took Giles about a year to go through and organize it. You know, there are all these like unmarked tapes and things like that. And he had to like figure out what was there, because it wasn't labeled or anything.
The one thing that I loved was the one piece of video footage you have throughout is the pro shot footage of the band playing. It looks like Long Island or New York, and just the imagery and throughout, you know, what the people are wearing, what the people in the crowd are wearing. And even that grainy Super 8, you still, and you guys being native New Yorkers, the streets of New York, the New York in the 70s is different than what New York is now. And it's a compliment, and you really, really captured something, and the editing is just, you're going from 1977 combination of still photos of these guys in someone's bedroom to all of a sudden, you know, you go back current day and have a commentary from one of these concert goers that you talked about. And they're talking about, it was just well, well edited. Did you realize after your editing, you're like, wow, this is something I wasn't thinking about that we're achieving?
No. Well, okay. There's like, when we first start going into that 70s vibe, you have some of those 70s New York City shots. Those were shots that I put in there that were not part of that Mark Reale archive. Those were just, you know, B-roll shots, stock footage that,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, let me set the 70s New York vibe here, you know, before we get into this footage. And then footage sort of carries it forth. But like all that street stuff, you know, with the cop car and the house, you know, like the traffic, like that stuff that I put in to just sort of like, you know, set the scene basically.
Mm-hmm. I love these graffiti images of like the old days of metal where, you know, teenagers went out and they spray painted underneath their local tunnels or their local schoolyard. Just to know those photos exist is just badass.
Yeah, like I love that shot where they're like at the basketball court and they're all there and he's like, you know, doing pull-ups on the thing. Like, to me, that's just so like such a like New York, classic New York feel to it. Like, so I yeah, like, and when they're walking around, like, I just loved, like, it's like time travel, you know, like this, like this. When I first saw this footage, I'm like, holy shit, this is like fucking magical, you know, like.
That's what I'm saying. It's magical. Someone my age that's watching this, I know they're going to go back. It's like, it's a time capsule. It is like, it brought me back to when, as a 14-year-old, and I heard on my local rock channel, the first time I heard Swords and Tequila. But let's talk about how Riot got a bad record label deal and just the turmoil of the band.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but this is what everyone has talked about is this, you know, record deal that they initially signed. And apparently that's why, you know, like Phil Fight left and Lou didn't want to sign it. You know, like these guys who left early on didn't want to sign the contract. And as it says in the film, you know, their lawyer advised them against signing it, but they just wanted a record deal. And, they were young and they sort of gave up all their control. Like the cover and all that, like all that stuff that was done with the Seal mascot, you know, that they had nothing, no input into that. That just was like, okay, here's how, what it's going to be. Here's what it's going to look like. You know, once they recorded the music, they were sort of out of the picture and the finances were just, you know, they didn't know what was going on. They weren't getting reports or accounting or anything. And yeah, I mean, that's what hurt them, you know, down the line. Is why guys kept leaving the band is that they weren't able to like sort of get a living wage, I guess.
Damien, there was a segment where it shows the importance of Riot because there was footage of James and Lars coming in wearing their Riot t-shirts, right? But it also, the interesting point was around how they got the guidance from the management of Metallica, Cliff Bernstein at the time, where he basically said, run, get out of this. This is a bad deal. You guys have all the songs and all the tools and all the talent, but you got to get out of your band management. And I believe it was Rick Ventura who was the one that went on your documentary and stated that. Yeah. So, talk a little bit about that comment you heard from Rick and what you heard from the professionals that were there at the time.
Well, the Riot was, you know, the talent was there. They were up and coming. But I guess like the way their management operated and interacted with other people from on the business side, they were not wanting to relinquish control, you know, like. They just didn't want it. It just, I guess they wanted to just like keep control of the whole situation. And, you know, Mark mentions it, Rick mentions it. I mean, anyone who was there, I guess, has that. I mean, it's hard for me to comment more than what's on the film because I, you know, I, that was before my time.
Right.
But, I think, you know, these guys just had control. And like John Zazula, you know, when he had Metallica at some point, you know, he let them, they went up, he was crushed by it, but you know, they moved on to a bigger label. And that's what they needed to do to grow, even though like John had done all this stuff for them, right? To bring them onto Megaforce and created the label. But to get to the next level, they needed to move beyond that. And Riot did also, but those guys didn't want to let them go.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Damien, what I don't understand about that first, the management, the fact that they had such a stranglehold on the band financially, but yet they weren't letting them, you know, be profitable or expand. It didn't make sense.
And they were on a big, they were getting big tours, right? They landed an opening slot on the Rush tour. Rick, when we had Rick on our show about a year ago, he was talking about the nerves that they had going out and, you know, opening up their hometown show in Nassau Coliseum, you know? So the goods were there. They were getting on those tours. It's just a shame that, you know, they got more lives to come, but it wasn't to be at that point.
Well, Guy had had enough. He'd had, he'd been doing it, I guess, for 5 years at that point, right? And I guess he felt things weren't going anywhere. He was tired of the business. He was maybe tired of the personalities, tired of being on the road, and wanted to settle down. And he checked out. And that was, I mean, yeah, like Rick says, that was the sound of Riot. I mean, guys, his writing style, like everything was like that. That was the magic, was part of the magic. You know, Mark and Guy, you know, they were the writing team, right? So that really like threw their trajectory out of whack, I think.
And that's where you, I think you do an amazing job at closing out chapter one, because chapter one ends when Guy makes the decision to leave the band. So, Damien, talk about chapters 2, 3, and 4. What's to come in the vision of your project now as you leave from that point and it goes up to where in their history?
Well, I'll just say, like, initially, I didn't plan to have this chronology. Initially, I wanted to just jump around between the different eras of Riot and sort of like explore a little bit here, explore a little bit there, because that's how I started discovering them. And I feel like sometimes there's people who just get like stuck in one era and they're not open to like exploring some of the other versions. So I kind of wanted to mix it up. But then as I got access to this footage and the story started coming together, I'm like, okay, I can make a coherent chronology here. So chapter two picks up with Rhett Forrester replacing Guy. And then there's not a whole ton of footage from that time like there was from the Guy time. And I'm not sure where that footage came from, if it was like their management recording at the time or if it was Mark and his friends, because Mark was also liked filmmaking before he really started focusing on music. I've heard that or read that he, you know, he had Super 8 cameras and he liked filming. So maybe that was just like his personal movie collection, but it's not a whole bunch of footage, but it goes into Guy. We showcase some of the stuff with Guy and the music videos that they made. They made two music videos with Guy, Restless Breed and Born in America. So we're sort of like, just like, okay, like how did their music sound change and focus at the, highlighting that, the music. And then,
are you referring to Rhett? You were saying Guy.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Just to clarify that. Yeah. So they did the two videos, and that makes sense, because the MTV explosion was in 81. So by 82, 83, and the momentum of the band never stopped because they were getting those arena slots. I saw them with the Scorpions in Rainbow. That was a major arena tour in the golden age of metal and MTV. So, you know, the momentum was continuing.
Yeah, they were still on Elektra Records for the Restless Breed album, but then they got dropped after that. And so the Born in America album was put out by a small indie label in Canada called Quality Records. And after that, they didn't have like the big label backing. And so, you know, they went from Capitol and playing like on these tours still that you're saying, you know, still building in that momentum that they had built over all these years. But then it was like a step backwards. Then, and then after that, the band sort of disintegrated.
Yeah, that's what you're going to say. Like, they did have a bit of a renaissance when Thundersteel came out in the late 80s or 90. I can't remember what year it was. And their sound changed a little bit. It was more like around that traditional power metal, European power metal. But then I just remember it being, this is when I was picking up Riot. I remember going to It's Only Rock and Roll on 8th Street, and I remember one of the guys that used to go in there, Vinny, he handed me the Thundersteel promo cassette that he made a copy of it, and he's like, yeah, you got to listen to this. This is some good shit, you know, in his New York accent. And that, I was sold at that point in time. But, you know, again, then it was just, you know, you had Mike DeMeo and Mark Torelli, and it just was guys coming and going. I remember seeing them at a place in Jersey called Double D's in the early 2000s, and it was actually sad. It was Mark and Mark Torelli, and I don't remember who the other guys were. And they played this little bar, and there was probably under 100 people there. Great show, but this is was just the band holding on for dear life. So, Damien, talk about how you have covered those eras in your film.
So the chapter two also goes into the Narita band in Texas, where Mark hooked up with Donny Van Stavern. And that's when they first did this Thundersteel sort of sound. So the film explores like this transition from Mark switching his guitar stylings in his collaboration with Donnie and how they went back to New York and sort of formed the Thundersteel lineup and put out this power speed metal album, which I love. Some people who like the classic Riot don't like, but it's also, I think, has the same formula where it's high, fast energy, aggressive music with like this melodic overtones over it. But it's definitely like a more metal sounding, you know, music piece. But so chapter two explores like this was interesting to me. It's like, how did they go from here to there? You know, how from like the Rhett Forest, like how did their music and I did an interview with Donnie, and he talks about how Mark was getting more into like the guitar virtuosos, you know, like Malmsteen and all that, and wanting to up his game. And, you know, that's where music was moving at the time with like a lot of these metal bands coming up. So it's like, okay, let's get back into like what's happening, you know? So again, that goes into chapter two goes into the end of the 80s, into about Privilege of Power 1990. And then chapter three is the DeMeo era, which is the 90s into early 2000s. And the DeMeo era was actually like they're most consistent. They put out six albums with Mike DeMeo, which is, you know, they'd never done that before. And that was pretty, you know, rare for them to have like this stability within their lineup. And I actually really like chapter three. It's not so well known, and the music is it's a different style, but I feel it's like a combination of all their previous styles, you know, like fused together, and it's just like melodic metal style with Mike DeMeo had more sort of like a Rhett Forester type vocal style. So I really enjoyed that style, that era also, and there's more footage of Mark from that era. So for me, that chapter three is really cool because you get to see a lot more of Mark Reale behind the scenes and get a sense for his personality and how he worked. And you know, part of this project is also giving Mark a voice, you know, like finding these old recordings of Mark telling his story and putting them, finding the where they're going to fit best and putting them together. So chapter three really like... I think Mark came into his own. He left the label finally in the mid-90s, and you know that he had been with since 75 or 77 when they signed. So This story of Mark Reale also that's being presented more, I think, as the chapters go on or as we move through like the different eras, you're also getting a sense of Mark's story too.
I have one comment. Maybe I have to do my heavy metal homework, but you mentioned at this era, Mike on vocals, Mark Reale on guitar.
Donnie left after the Privilege of Power album, and he was replaced with Pete Perez, also from Texas. He was part of this, you know, San Antonio metal scene. and Bobby Yarzombek, who was on Thundersteel and Privilege of Power. So he was sort of in and out of the band through the 90s. He did their first album with Mike DeMeo, Nightbreaker. Then John Macaluso drummed for Brethren of the Longhouse, which came out in, I think, 94. And then Yarzombek came back for Inishmore in 96 and Sons of Society in 97. And then Bobby Rondinelli drummed in 2002 for Through the Storm. And then Frank Gilchrist drummed for Army of One, and it came out in 2005. And Frank is the current drummer for Riot 5. So Mike Flintz was the guitarist through all that time, since 89, when we started touring with them. And then after Privilege of Power, he became, you know, a recording full-fledged member. And he's been with the band ever since. And Mark's, you know, dueling guitar partner.
Yeah,
they have great dueling guitar stuff during that time. I really love hearing that. That's, I think, the highlight for me from that is just like the Mike Flintz, Mark Reale dueling guitars going on. And Mike DeMeo, you know, was the vocalist. So, you know, it's pretty steady, except the drummers kept changing. But Pete Perez stayed on through and up until the Thundersteel reunion also. So, yeah, it was the most stable lineup, right. Six albums, but they're not as well known, but they're worth checking out.
Well, I got my heavy metal homework in front of me.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Mike, I'd look at him as, he's kind of he's taking this band forward. He takes it personal. This is his band now. It's a tribute to his friend who brought him on board, and he's going to carry that legacy of the band forward. I mean, he's the sound and the name behind Riot 5. So just back to the Keep It True Festival, Damien, you were there, you witnessed it, you talked to the fans. Talk a little bit about the performance. Like, how did the European crowd take Riot 5? You had a sort of a new up-and-coming singer, Todd, coming out here. Like, did he deliver? I love the image of in the video of him showing up Mark's guitar case. I thought that was like dear to your heart.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Todd's a fantastic vocalist. I mean, you'll see it more when we get to chapter 4, which is, you know, sort of the origin story of Riot 5. But he just sings like he can cover like every era almost like effortlessly, it seems. Like he's just very like natural, and he was very well received. I mean, people love, you know, especially in Europe, they love like this power metal sound. So, you know, so they're more into like Thundersteel is the album for them, more so than like they appreciate like the Fire Down Under and the Red, but like Thundersteel is really like, you know, that's like what turned them on to Riot. So this sound that is more in the power metal Thundersteel sound of Riot 5, and that's a collaboration between Mike Flintz and Donny Van Stavern, which is, you know, having again this high energy, aggressive metal, but with this melodic stuff going on all around it and fused together. And yeah, people love it. People knew the words, you know, like there, especially this Keep It True Festival, like the people here there really appreciate more underground bands and cult metal and traditional metal. And they're really sort of like experts, you know, in that genre and on the scene. And that's one reason I wanted to explore the festivals a little bit, to sort of establish that like, you know, these are people who take their metal really seriously. You know, they're not like casual, like this is their life, this is their religion. And you know, they know what they're talking about, or they really mean it, you know, like they're passionate about it to a level that, you know, sort of maybe the average rock and roll person is not. Like, these are people who really like dig into things. So they're super, you know, Riot 5 are superstars.
Damien, let's recap the YouTube schedule where people could find information about New York Rocks and everything with this docuseries.
So there's a YouTube channel, NYC Rocks TV. And that's where everything is playing, and I'm premiering it every Saturday in January, at 2 o'clock New York time, 8 p.m. Germany time. So there's like a premiere and then a live chat during the premiere. And then the film will just live on that link for some time. So it'll be available there in, you know, indefinitely at the moment. And yeah, so there's one chapter every Saturday in January for 4 chapters. Chapter 3, the Riot Metal era, 90s into early 2000s. And then chapter 4 is a Thundersteel reunion. And then the continuing on as Riot 5. And then there is a bonus episode, which is the Mark and Guy 1994 writing jam. And what that is something that exists to the public as part of these Riot Archive sets. So there's five different sets.
Mm-hmm.
And on one of the, only on the CD, there's a data track that was recorded when there was, in 1994, Guy wanted to do a comeback. And he got together with Mark to just like try to hash out some song ideas. And so this data track exists like on this compilation, but it's really hard to play. And like most people have never heard it. You know, you have to like put the CD into a computer and be able to like open a data track or have a CD player that plays a data track. You know, it doesn't play as a regular track. So I listened to it and it's like really cool, but it's long, it's a little repetitive. And so I edited it down to make it like more digestible and manageable and threw in some of that old footage just over this audio. It was just a DAT tape that was recorded, you know, like from this get together that they did. And there's some chit chat between Guy and Mark and like, you know, I've never seen interviews with Guy, so it's like you get to hear like him talk and get his personality. So for the hardcore fans, I think that this is like something really special. Like it'll be really cool. And there's also, I have a website called www.nycrocks.tv. Mm-hmm. And all that, you can find everything there also. So you can, you know, just go to that website and the different episodes will appear there and there's more information in a press release. And some of the past works we've done for NYC Rocks, which is two seasons of a web series and the Bitch, a Ladies Tribute to Metal documentary. Hopefully, you know, what the idea is to release these sort of like 1 week apart, like kind of old school style where like you can build a little anticipation. You're not just like dumping all the episodes at once. And hopefully like it'll, you know, build a little momentum and attention to going forward, you know, as people hear about it, maybe, you know, have that, oh, you can talk about it in between like the week, you know, like you used to do. So that was part of the idea.
Well, that's what we're planning on here. So listeners, this will be debuted 8 p.m. on Thursday night. So you have a chance to watch episode 1 and get ready for episode 2. And we will have all of these links and everything Damian just mentioned right down below in the show notes for the show. Well, it's invaluable content and we thank you for doing that. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm glad you guys caught wind of the film, you know, like I didn't know how many people, like how it would get out there, but yeah, I'm glad people are digging it and it sort of seems to be accomplishing the mission and you know, accomplishing Mark's mission of getting his music out to the world also.
Well, thank you.
Nice to meet you guys, and thanks for all having me.
Yeah, see you, man.
Have a good one.
Cheers. Bye.
Wow, what a story. And it's just getting better. There you have Damian Collodi, the filmmaker behind the 4-part docuseries Immortal Soul, a Riot tribute and concert film. Well, we have on the line right now Rick Ventura. Rick was the guitarist for the band during the heyday, the Narita, Fire Down Under, Restless Breed period. He was there at the pinnacle, the peak. So let's get him on here. Rick, welcome to Metal Mayhem. Thanks for joining us. So right off the bat, have you had a chance to, even though you're in this docuseries, have you had a chance to see the first 2 episodes? If so, what do you think?
Yes, I have. It was really such brought back a lot of memories, a lot of footage that I never saw before, which was really, really cool. You know, that, I mean, it was, I saw some images of the band before I was in the band, and before, I think an original band, actually, when they were doing covers and and playing at parties and stuff like that. I remember there was one footage there where I saw myself standing in the background watching the band, which was kind of cool. My God, it was like teenagers, you know?
And that was part of what I expressed to Damien in our interview, that the imagery and the documentation of those old 8mm home movies and all this media that they were fortunately able to obtain, it really painted a visualization of that time period.
Right. Yeah. There's something, you know, about the 8mm. It's just, you know, it just shows you that period. You know, so it's like when you watch stuff from the 20s and 30s, you know, footage from that period, and then you know, every decade, you know, there's new advancements in technology, and you see it, you know, and that just screams, you know, 70s. And Mark was really into 8mm. He used to film a lot, and he did a lot of he did some primitive claymation stuff too. He was really into 8. So some of that footage is probably his.
It was pretty cool how Damien mentioned in our interview with him that he actually obtained the material through Mike Flins,
right,
who I guess was keeping in touch with Mark's dad.
Yes,
and he went back to his house and just basically he said he gave him everything.
That's
boxes of photos and, yeah, so pretty amazing.
Yeah, because I was looking at that stuff and, well, this definitely is from, you know, from Mark's archives, because he was always with the camera. And so it was a real blast seeing that footage. You know, it just you know, took me back to that period, and saw a lot of friends in the footage there, and the evolution of the band.
Well, yeah, Damien also mentioned that Giles Laverley, that was, you know, he was the producer of that
right,
the Metal Voice did something on Riot. So he was the one that actually, him and Mark, they obtained all this, but then nothing was labeled. So it took them a while to go through everything and inventory it. But so for you to see all that stuff, that must have been a real treat, Rick, to...
Oh, no doubt. In fact, I'm probably going to watch it again. Yeah, I watched it with my girlfriend, and she got a kick out of it. I'm definitely going to watch it again because, you know, how often do you see stuff like this? once in every 20, 30, 40 years, you know, so it'll be a blast going through it. It's like going through, you know, just the other day I was going through music that I've had on all various formats, from mini disc to SD cards to, like, and it's like, and even cassettes, and I'm going, wow. I have to spend some time going through all this, and it's really a monumental task to really go through all these different formats and try to, you know, pick out some gems that might be floating about over the past number of years. So that's a major undertaking. So I can imagine what Giles and Mike went through getting that footage, and Damien putting this all together. I would have loved to have been there, actually, because I was there, you know, during that period. So it would have been cool if they had reached out to me, but whatever.
Hey, Rick, just a question on your emotional reaction to seeing these pictures. Uh-huh. Were there any images or footage that you saw that maybe you said to yourself, wow, I've actually never seen a photo of myself at that show? Or maybe you said, oh my God, I forgot about that show. Or, you know, it was something that took you back to a time where maybe you needed almost to remember again all about a certain emotional experience you had with the band. What was your takeaway on seeing these things for the first time?
Yeah, that's why I want to revisit it, because it went by so quick. And, you know, watching my father's place, you know, that was a very memorable moment to me. I'd come off the road and, It was very exciting to play in our hometown. So yeah. that was a thrill. And just seeing some friends in the audience there. There's a lot of shots that I haven't seen, because I tend to, I don't know, when everything, if something's ever recorded or filmed, I tend to never watch it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, for some reason, I just, okay, like people say, hey, aren't you watching this? Why aren't you doing this? I'm gonna, you know, but then, you know, decades later, it's like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. I don't remember seeing that. So I'm gonna do watch it again this weekend and pick out some things there. But there was definitely some footage, you know, hanging out in the cars that I totally forgot about. You know, kidding around. You know, a bunch of friends just hanging out. You know, just having fun. Those times you tend to forget, but it was very cool seeing the good times that we had together. Because we all really, really were like good friends and got along quite well.
Do you ever stop and think, it's like this filmmaker, he discovered this band that's 40 years old and just discovered them 3 years ago. And Damien put this much effort, blood, sweat, and tears into something, digging up this media of your life. And it's just like, yeah. Thank you for this gift.
Yeah, it still surprises me that after all these years, I mean, there was something about that band that that just ignites something in a new audience. That blew me away that he was just turned on to the band so recently, and to make the effort of doing this.
Yeah.
Obviously, the band means a lot to him, and he wants to get it out there. He feels that it's worth, the music's and the story's worthy enough to let more people know about the music and what the band has been through. So kudos to him. You know, it was really impressive, and I thanked him.
Hey, Rick, one comment I have, or observation I have in the film, is that yes, he goes back in history, and there was the focus that was around Riot 5 playing at the Keep It True Festival.
Yeah.
But you, as we all know, you have a version, your own band called Riot Act,
right,
that covers off on the period of the four albums that you played on.
Right.
Talk about the guys in Riot Act, your band members.
Mm-hmm.
Their history with the origins of Riot. You know, were they fans? Were these guys that lived it too? And maybe in a sense, like, you know, it would be nice that if we could include a little bit of Riot Act into some of the discussions about the legacy of the band going forward.
Yeah, that would have been nice. And I really, like you said, I really didn't do an 101 with him. It would have been nice, you know, chapter 4, if we went into that, you know, talked about Riot Act. I mean, I'll be surprised when I watch chapter 4, but I really don't know what to expect. But as far as members of Riot Act, the only one that really knew about Riot was our drummer, Claudio. He was the first person I met. I used to run into him at jams, and one time I got to jam, and then, you know, he found out that I was in Riot, and he was just like, he knew everything about Riot, you know, so he even opened me up to some things that I didn't even know, which was kind of cool, and how Riot was viewed in various countries. He's from Argentina, and he used to tell me how popular the album Nerita was.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, you know, knew more about Riot than the other two. Paul and Don heard the name, but I don't think they knew much about the band. Riot was always under the radar, you know. But Claudia knew a lot. I mean, he really knew, you know, so that was kind of cool. And he was educating the other two about Riot, which is, I always find interesting.
But to bring in and to form a new band, Rick, I mean, a guy like Don Chafin, as we're talking about here, who assumes the role of vocalist.
Right.
I mean, you guys put out an album of great album last year of new material. Yeah. But for somebody like him, he has to connect to the history and the sound and the aura of the band, or it's not going to work in 2022 or 2023. So talk about Don. Like, how did he grasp the concept of Riot and the legacy that you were trying to bring into modern day times?
Really?
Yeah, interesting. He started listening to the records because we did a 12 song EP before the new material was released. We revisited a dozen Riot songs that Don really wanted to get it right. He's pretty meticulous. And the more he listened to Riot and Guy's lyrics and his delivery, he really started to appreciate what Riot was and Guy's uniqueness. Guy was really did well with lyrics, telling a story, and that's part of the reason I think songs resonate with old fans and new fans. There are stories he tells, and when we were recording, you know, Don really did his homework. I mean, there were times we were in the studio, and I'm in the control room, and he's going, "How is that, Rick?" And I'm going, "I feel like it's like 40 years ago, and I'm in the studio with Guy singing." It was kind of eerie.
Yeah.
Because really, his timbre, his range, he was the first vocalist that really captured Guy. Like, I've seen all the vocalists that, and there's some great vocalists, you know, that Riot had throughout the years. But no one really could capture Guy, and Don was the only one that could really do that. And we've been well received. The last few tours we've done in England, in Europe, I mean, everyone seems to love the band, and that's the goal, right? To play and be well received, because if it wasn't well received, you know, I wouldn't be here now. We wouldn't be discussing anything. But all the shows have been great.
You know, it's really a unique situation, because we see it time and time again in today's rock landscape of some older bands. They splinter off. You have several different versions. Sure. But it's not like that with this, because you're, even though you're not original, you're as close to original. Now we're talking, you know, the very beginning, but you're, sure, you know, there, you're there for that heyday period of the original Riot. And right, then the Riot 5 guys, that's the next generation after you left the band, after they came back. It's sort of like, you know, the second wife and the second family. And you're all just celebrating the spirit of Riot. Riot Act does your thing. You had Closer to the Flame, your original material, but yet you're playing the Riot that you were involved with. And then Danny and, you know, the second and third incarnations, they're carrying the torch for Riot 5. And they had a lot of great material. It was a different band, sure, like you said. You've been on record saying that later period, that's a different band. Even though it said Riot, like originally they came out with Narita. So it's what I'm really trying to say is, again, it's a celebration. And I think there's enough room for everyone to be acknowledged and respected. You know, what would be a real cool thing is for Riot Act and Riot 5 to play together? I don't know.
I've heard, you know, a few people had mentioned that, you know, and I guess that would be interesting, right? Because there's fans of both eras, there's fans that like both bands, and you know, they're, you know, fans are very fickle. It's like, you know, you know, take, for example, Deep Purple. Like, a lot of people say, oh, Deep Purple is not Deep Purple without Ritchie Blackmore, you know? And...
Well, excuse me, Walt, you missed this. He's making a... Rick was making a Deep Purple reference.
Ah, my favorite.
Oh, he's a Purple fan, huh?
Yes, okay. Yes.
So, okay. So Rick was saying, commenting on, you know, the split... You know, is it Deep Purple, Ritchie Blackmore without Ritchie Blackmore? Now here they are, three, four guitarists down the line. You have the new guy replacing Steve Morris. And
so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they had, wow, you know, like, I mean, after Gillan, you know, Coverdale Hughes. So, they, well, you know, there are a few vocalists there. So, I mean, but Wright has been through so many changes, insane. But, it, you know, it's essentially, it was Mark doing his thing and keeping it going. You know, it just went in a different direction, you know, after the period that I was in the band.
It's just different now because there's no, those guys... You know, they carried on. They're playing original Riot material. Yeah. It's still part of their set. It's not like they're a tribute band because they're not. They're just playing stuff from your era, but you're not playing stuff from the later era. You're playing your era Riot and then your new band stuff. So it's...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's basically... My whole thing was just, if I want to do this, I want to play new material. I don't want to be... Tribune just going out there playing the old stuff. Of course you want to play that stuff because I like playing it. I love playing those songs. It's just so much fun. It just, you know, it just brought me back to what it was like to be in Riot during that period and to play those songs and just to see the people's reaction. And I think they get a thrill. I've seen an original member from that era playing, you know, that's the whole magic. Like if I go see a band that I'm a fan of, you know, and it's whoever, that particular guy from the original, that's like, ah, you know, that's something magical about that, you know?
Yeah.
And you can see it in the fans' faces when we play the songs. So that's like, you know, that's very rewarding.
Yeah. What one question about the video footage from the documentary? Where was that concert? Was it Long Island? I say pro shot, the video where the guy saying, "Hey, we came all the way up from Texas for this gig."
Yeah, yeah.
Where was that?
That was a very well-known venue, my father's place in Roslyn, Long Island.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody played there. That was the place to play. So, and you know, the radio broadcast from WLIR, and that was like, oh wow, you know, we were like so thrilled to be playing there.
That was, you know, great. Frankly, I love the pictures of the people in the crowd and the one guy with the Aussie shirt. You know, it was like, and just again, it's just a timepiece. It's the girls with hair.
Yeah, no doubt. Very memorable performance and gig.
Rick, you mentioned earlier, you said you saw an image of, to correct me if I'm wrong, you said you saw a performance. It was an image of the band performing, but you were an audience member?
Yeah, I think it might have been at a block party, which were very popular in the 70s. Bands perform in the neighborhood, and Riot did. That's how I came across Riot. They were a three-piece band. And that's why I want to go back and look at that footage, because while I was watching it, I said, that's me. I'm watching the band. So I'm going to go back and revisit that. Yeah, because I would always follow the band around. You know, the first time I saw them Riot play at one of these block parties, I was like, oh, you know, who are these guys? Most bands were playing just pop stuff at these parties. You know, you go see bands, and then all of a sudden you hear this like crazy guitar play, distorted guitar playing, and I remember going, "What the hell is this?" and going over and finding, you know, Mark and Phil and Peter playing Montrose Band Company, just mm-hmm. all over the place, just really humble, heavy, just heavy stuff. And it was like, and I always used to follow them around, and I became friends with Mark because he lived, you know, right around the corner from me. So that was a trip finding that out, you know. So I was at his house like every day.
How many years do you think it took, let's say, from the time you discovered Riot to you joining the band? Was it 2, 3, 4 years?
Well, that's 17, 9 years. Probably at least 3 years, at least. At least 3, maybe even 4. There was so many lineup changes in the band, even in the early days, you know. It was just... it was mostly covers, but then there was the point where it's like, wow, now it's time to get serious. And that's when, you know, when Guy came into the picture, because Mark did all the vocals when they were a cover band. Then when Guy came into the picture, it was like, oh, okay, now it's time to get serious.
I gotta ask you about, you don't have to go that far into it, the whole record company contract. And because in the documentary, again, we're talking about The Immortal Soul, a Riot tribute and concert film done by Damian Collodi. How bad was that record label contract, and how much of a presence was it within the band? Because, you know, you guys got shafted, if you will.
Well, I mean, it's the typical story with any, you know, you listen to interviews with practically every band, and they say the same exact thing. I was watching I think, yeah, Peter Battelli, he was talking about it in the mm-hmm. documentary, and you know, you young kids, the manager comes over, sign this, you guys want to make it, sign this. And it was like, oh boy, what are we gonna do, you know? And right, the deal, like Peter said, you know, it wasn't a great deal, but I guess you're at that age and you just have stars in your eyes, and it's just it's almost like you'll do anything, you know. I mean, famous stars talk about what they've been through, contracts that they signed, and they can't believe they did that, you know. But we had the opportunity to break away, and we didn't, you know. Something's just didn't sit right towards the end of my period, and you know,
it
I don't
is
know
what it is.
Tied to it.
Yeah. What are you gonna do? You can't change it. But well, 2023 Riot Act. You got done this fall. You did a little headliner throwback where you did Fire Down Under in its entirety over where was that, over in Japan?
In
England.
Yeah,
obviously. How'd it go? Was it a success?
It was great. It was real. All the shows, I mean, the fans really came out. They brought their records out, and that was a trip. It was really, there was some shows, most of the shows, people, they were singing the songs from Fire Down Under. I mean, that's how much those songs mean to the fans. I would speak to them after the show, and they were just telling the stories of like what it was like, you know, hearing that record for the first time. And a lot of them said it was like one of their top 10 albums of all time. So it's like, to hear that is just like, you know, you just kind of chill.
Hey, Rick, if Mark had not passed away, do you think he'd still be carrying the Riot band forward, you know, 12 years later?
I'm sure he would have kept it going. And I would have loved to think that we could have been reunited at one point, because there was a point before he did the Thundersteel reunion that we both spoke quite a few times about getting the original lineup together with the new vocalist. And I almost had him going, you know. He was saying, "Yeah, you think so, really?" And we spoke quite a few times at length about doing something, but never materialized. And unfortunately, you know, passed away a few years after that. But I think it would have been kind of cool, you know, if we got together even to do one record. I'm sure Mark would have been doing it.
Yeah.
So, Rick, what's next for Riot Act 2024? More dates, new studio stuff? How do you take the band from this point forward?
Yeah, well, the whole music industry is just, it's always been tough, but it's even tougher now. But we're going to the studio and recording new material, because that's what you do.
Yeah.
When you're a new band. So I have a lot of material, and we got about three or four new ideas that are really good that we're going to, over the next 2 months, we're going to be recording, and we'll hopefully have an album out maybe by fall. And dates, you know, Amanda Giles is working on dates for us, so hopefully we'll be out there, most probably in Europe, I would think.
Well, again, the documentary is Immortal Soul, a Riot tribute and concert film by Damian Collaudi. It's on YouTube and four-parter. And this Saturday at 2 p.m., Chapter 3 will debut. And Chapter 4 is next Saturday at 2 p.m. on YouTube. So, Rick Ventura, thanks for spending the afternoon with us and sharing your commentary on this.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a pleasure talking about it. Thanks, Damian, if you're listening, for doing this.
Walt, any parting shots for Rick?
No, Rick, it was just good to see you again, and we'll see you the next time we have an occasion to get it out there. I'm going to drive to your basement. I'm going to go hang out in that basement. Looks like a cool place to hang. Yeah, John, next time John comes, we're going to go in. We're going to Queens, so we're going to go hang in your basement.
All right. Sounds like a plan, man.
All right, man. Have fun. Thank you. Take care, bud.
Thanks, guys. Take care, man. Right,
thanks, see Rick. See you soon.
All right. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. Rick Ventura, his commentary on Immortal Soul, a Riot tribute and concert film. Well, let's wrap this up. What's your finalized take on all this?
It got me inspired again to go back and appreciate the band Riot, because they really are a treasure. And it's really nice to know all these years later that somebody new's coming back in there, discovering it, getting the passion for it, and bringing the public awareness back into the band. You just see in the discussion with Rick, who was there, smiles on his face, enthusiasm. He's reflecting back, and he's loving everything about the life that was put him on the map in the band. And I'm just so happy that we got a chance to talk to the filmmaker, relive our own memories, John, and also have a nice closing piece in speaking to Rick about a guy who was there in the sweet spot of the band's history.
Yeah, well said. All right, well, you know, just a quick reminder, get up to the website, metalmayhemroc.com, sign up for our newsletter, stay in touch with us, and, you know, go back and check all things out. Coming up in the near future, interview with Roy Z surrounding the new Bruce Dickinson release, and hopefully in the spring, someone from Judas Priest, as the Invincible Shield is gaining momentum, and that comes out real soon. For my co-host Metal Walt, I'm the Vernomatic, and we are Metal Mayhem ROC.
Metal for life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at metalmayhemroc.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.